The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 4 podcast.
We were talking to Commissioner Sankey, I believe it was on Friday, from Minneapolis, and he mentioned being the co-chair of the NCAA Division I Transformation Committee with Julie Cromer. Many of you may remember when she was the senior deputy athletic director at the University of Arkansas. She's worked at the NCAA. She is currently the athletic director at Ohio University in Athens, Ohio. And we're delighted to welcome Julie to our program. Julie, thank you. Thank you very much for making time. We really look forward to having this conversation.
Hi, Paul. Thanks for the opportunity and good to be in touch with you again.
Thank you. We were talking to Greg Sankey on Friday about all these things that are currently going on, which are very difficult for any of us lay people to understand. But in particular, can you discuss what the committee that you and Commissioner Sankey are co-chairing in terms of what it means and where are we going with the NCAA right now?
Sure. Well, as you know, we are in interesting times. We have more money than ever flowing through college athletics. We are in a digital space. We have a new generation of student athletes. And most recently, we're in a post-Alston era that includes NIL and greater transfer flexibility than ever before. So now's the time to reassess, reevaluate how we are organized within the NCAA, within our Division I. And in some ways, you know, it's an opportunity to turn some of our thinking around and change things up a bit.
Julie, the easiest thing for somebody like me is to sit up here on a hill and take shots and say the NCAA is broken, we need to throw everyone overboard. But that's not really how you solve problems in your space. And you've seen the biggest and the best, having spent that time in Arkansas in the SEC. You've seen it from all sides. So how do you go about something like this, and how do you make it effective and enact change that maybe saves an archaic institution the way it's currently set up and structured?
Well, I appreciate that framing. You know, Paul, not everyone would be so generous. You know, there are people who have lost trust in the NCAA and who are critical. And in many cases, it's with good reason. You know, some of the shots may be unfair, but in a lot of ways, we have earned our way to this place. And so I think it's an opportunity for those of us who care about college sports, who believe in the benefit of participation and, frankly, the community that we create for the fan bases. It's an opportunity for us to get serious about finding solutions now before other institutions, Congress, state government, the courts, et cetera, find those solutions and impose them upon us. So I do believe we have great people involved, as you indicated. Commissioner Sankey and I are doing our best to lead a group of 21 really talented people who spent a lot of time in this industry, that come from all parts of Division I and understand it and have been at very high successful levels dealing with very powerful coaches and very talented athletes. And now's the time for us to roll our sleeves up and get it right.
Julie, I'd like to peel this curtain back a little bit, because when you meet with your colleagues or relate to them somehow via Zoom or however these days, you're all smart, well-educated, thoughtful people who want what's best. But how do you navigate those waters when you get all these people together in a room trying to solve problems that are almost unsolvable?
Well, you know, it would be naive of me to say that we all believe in it so much that that's all we need to work it out, Paul. But, you know, the reality is there are things that bind us together in this experience. We just went through three incredible weeks of men's and women's basketball tournaments that were a lot of fun, not only for those teams who were involved, but for those of us who were watching and following along. And there is this collective experience that we all value. We may all take a different benefit from it, but it's really important to focus on what binds us and what it is that we find worth protecting. And, you know, we understand, those of us who are in this day to day, we understand the impact we have on the lives of young people and on the communities we serve. And we have to find ways to rally around that commonality, if you will, and come to the table to be able to find the solutions. that will allow us to save those elements that can endure in college athletics, and then, frankly, to get rid of the parts that aren't working.
I hate to jump on the second part of what you said, but what part is working the least right now with the NCAA?
Well, it's a tight race for the least. But I will say, you know, we've got infractions proceedings that are taking way too long to resolve. We have a rule book that is entirely too big. We are so caught up in regulatory structure that we cannot get to the forward thinking that we need in order to really take on some of the issues around how our student athletes are supported and how they have an opportunity to share in some of the benefits and spoils, if you will, of college athletics. And so, you know, we need to streamline the rule book. We need to shorten the infractions process. We need to make sure that we punish those who are actually involved in the cases and not those who are left behind or come after. And then we need to really think about how we organize ourselves to make decisions effectively and efficiently so we're spending more of our attention and focus on the field, on the court, and for that matter, in the gyms and the pools and the tracks than we are in meeting rooms trying to figure out how this went wrong.
Julie, I know any case that's currently going through the system, and there are many who have been there way too long, will at some point be adjudicated. But moving forward from last July 1st on in the era of NIL, how does enforcement work when most of us believe schools are buying players? And I know I say that loosely, and coaches are laughing, saying, well, what we're doing now used to be illegal. How do you square all that in a structure that has to be regulated?
Well, I think you start by emphasizing the rules that matter and are appropriate for the enterprise we have going forward. And so that's the effort to streamline the rule book. And then you streamline the process so that there can be some credibility in that process. As I mentioned before, we're taking entirely too long to resolve these cases. And then when we do, because in part of the delay, but also because of the penalties that end up being devised or the penalties that end up being avoided, we have a great amount of dissatisfaction with the results. And so, you know, we are working with a group, the Transformation Committee is working with a group that has already taken a head start in trying to figure out the infractions process itself. As you know, Commissioner Sankey is very involved in that process and identifying solutions. And here in a few weeks, couple weeks in Indianapolis, we will receive their preliminary report and begin to take a look at some of the recommendations that we hope will give us an opportunity to answer your question more directly.
Julie, we talk about NIL and in the space of the SEC, and you know the lay of the land, having spent those many years in Fayetteville. How is it different for you, moving away from the questions that I asked you about the committee, to being an athletic director where you are now and dealing with things on a little bit of a different level? I've got friends who teach at your school, and they take athletics very seriously. I'm not saying anything of the like, but it is a different scale, so to speak. How is it different for you, and what has this experience been like?
Well, it is a different scale. We are very competitive, and we are very proud of where we are in the landscape. And I appreciate the question, Paul, because sometimes these discussions can be reduced in a way that, you know, it's a bit of an all or nothing discussion. At the mid-major level, we do extraordinary work every day to develop student athletes, give them an opportunity to pursue their talents within the context of also pursuing their education. And they have opportunities too. You know, they may not have the amount of exposure as they, you know, the student athletes that we were serving in Fayetteville, who, you know, have the benefit of your network and plenty of platforms across all of the sports. But they care just as much, and these developmental opportunities are just as important. And then when they do, we do have teams who break through and compete at a high level on the national scale with opportunities for visibility, then we want to be prepared to make the most of it. The best example I can give you is our men's basketball run last year. We went two rounds deep into the tournament. We had an outstanding point guard in Jason Preston. His story was picked up and amplified throughout college basketball. You may recall, Paul, he was discovered based on a video that he sent out on Twitter. And then he ended up going in the second round and is playing for the Clippers now. And so I think about what we could have done for an athlete like Jason if we had been in the era of the NIL, even here in Ohio. He could have had even more benefit to his experience here, you know, even with a scaled back experience at the mid-major level. So those opportunities are everywhere. They're throughout Division One. You just have to know how to leverage them and how to help identify those student athletes within your system that are a great match for the market.
Julie Cromer, the director of athletics at Ohio, and certainly considered one of the absolute bright stars in the universe of young athletic directors who are playing a big role, especially with her position with the transformation committee. Julie, thanks for coming on. We thoroughly enjoyed it. We wish you all the best and hope to see you soon.
Thank you, Paul. I appreciate it so much.
Thank you very much. I appreciate Julie joining us. And we are going to head for the break. More of your phone calls right here at 855-242-7285.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand-name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Paul. That's hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Kyle Bosby basically saying, no ulterior motive there, said. Anyway, we appreciate him paying attention to our Twitter feed. I'm sure he's been able to see a lot of things about his dad. And we like his dad. His dad's been, until the Oklahoma-Texas situation, Bob Bosby was an occasional guest of ours and a good guest. But he got mad after that. And he's just not returning our calls. But what do they always say when somebody leaves? We wish him well
in his future
endeavors. If I ever leave here, which I will soon, like tomorrow,
well.
I don't want Kubiak and Brams to issue a tweet. We wish Paul well in his future endeavors. That means a bad ending, right, Randy? Have you ever had that with you? You've had a great career. Nobody's ever pushed you out.
No.
I mean, I got pushed out of McDonald's when I was 16. And they wished me well in my future endeavors as they handed me a Big Mac, fries, and said, get out of here, kid, and don't come back.
And a free coat.
No more, no more, no more. John is up next in Florida. Hello, John.
Paul, I appreciate you having me on the show, as
Thank you.
Always. And,
you bet.
Yeah, I didn't know the McDonald's story. Really appreciate that. And I think you're really on a streak this month with as many people. I think you've already banned two or three people because of language. You're going to have to rename the show to like Paul Feinbaum or something like that.
So, I like that. The Paul Feinbaum show.
But I actually had somewhat of a personal question to ask you, and it's not too personal, but
sure.
If you don't want to answer it, you don't have to.
But
I was speaking with a friend of my father's who was born and raised in Memphis and then moved to Alabama and went to Auburn. And he was saying when he grew up, and what really struck me is several months ago, you had a segment on Atlanta and how fast it grew and something like that. and it's actually tied to that question. He was born and raised in Memphis, and saying when he was born and raised, Dallas, Atlanta, and Memphis were all relatively the same size cities, and that Dallas and Atlanta has skyrocketed, and Memphis has stayed stagnant. And he tried to blame that on the death of Martin Luther King Jr. And I remember you mentioning that yesterday, and I just want to get your response on that. If you,
John, I was a young person at the time, so my memory is leaning heavily on that and what others said since then. But that was a very divisive time in Memphis, and it nearly brought the city apart. I know because I became friends with the coach much later in life when he was in Birmingham at UAB. But the Memphis basketball team really is credited with saving the city from complete extinction when it had this run in 1973 to the national championship game where it lost. But I think tremendous damage occurred at that moment in time. There was great strife within the city. The mayor at the time was an absolute racist, and he brought much disregard and really disgust to any outsiders. Now the city had major industry already. FedEx was there. It started there, Holiday Inn. So you had right. A couple of major Fortune 500 companies that became monster companies. But the real issue in Memphis, and I think that if you go back and trace, where do cities die and where do cities grow? It usually evolves or revolves around one place, and that's transportation. And Memphis had a run with its airport, but it finally crashed and burned. And similar issues in Birmingham, another city I lived in. Birmingham's issues go a little bit deeper than Memphis's, a little farther back. This is anecdotal here, but there apparently was a time when Delta considered Birmingham versus Atlanta for its hub. And there were a couple of other factors involved, too. But Birmingham was just a complete disaster in the 50s and 60s, as Memphis was. And look at what happened to Atlanta. Dallas, I can't really speak of, even though Dallas suffered a tragedy equal to the King assassination 5 years later.
Right, absolutely. Well, and even speaking of that, and it's the off season, so we kind of talk about this. But like you said, Memphis or Nashville, that actually became the largest city recently, and I do agree. I think
Nashville is the biggest. And I think a lot of it. When I grew up, we literally looked down at Nashville. It was a town that had one thing, and at the time, very few people even respected that, and that was country music, and. I mean, you got to remember, country music in that day did not have the image that it does today.
So what would you give the main credit to the Nashville boom then?
Well, I think Nashville spent a lot of time and money on its downtown. And you go into, and I happened to be in Memphis about 3 years ago. I spent the night there. I was speaking somewhere nearby, and I had not really spent any time in Memphis. I mean, I'm through there going to Ole Miss, but ever since my mother died, I really have not gone back much. And I walked around the downtown, and Memphis basically has Beale Street, the FedEx Forum, and the rest of the downtown area. It has two or three blocks of great entertainment, and it's great. Memphis down there's an entertainment district in Memphis that is. That is spectacular, but the rest of the downtown looks like there hasn't been a new window pane put in 50 years.
I agree. Well, Paul, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Yeah, but that's Nashville is one of the great success stories in American today. I mean, there's been a transformation there, but it starts with industry. The airport was very slow to come around. The Nashville airport was way, way behind, but it isn't any longer. It's not Atlanta, but or even Charlotte for that matter, which is a hub, but it's closing. It will be soon. Thank you very much for the call. Need a city planner here to help me out. Dave, can you help me out?
Well, I don't know, Paul. I'd do my best.
Well, what's on your mind?
Well, it's been a great show. Really enjoyed the young lady's interview there. Let me start off with saying, though, that I-Man is three of the most boring people I've ever listened to in my life.
Three of the most boring?
At least three, probably a baker's dozen. Jim. There's all the time going off on Jim that's his go-to, but, you know, Jim's a heck of a lot more interesting, and at least he's authentic. And that picture of I-Man, I hope to God he didn't pay someone to take that. I mean, for the love of God, I mean, I'd get a refund, but that's not even why I called.
Yeah, the I-Man picture, it looks, I mean, I would say it looks like a mugshot, but that would be an insult to mugshots. We're going to, Dave, hold on. We're going to show the picture again. And I-Man insisted tonight. We were about to go to him, and he let our people know, hey, get my picture up there. I mean, so.
Yeah. Do you have to put it on? Do you really have to put it back on the screen?
We are going to, though. I want to see it.
Well, can I wait and hide my eyes? But anyway. The reason I called was the NIL thing. I mean, you know, I don't really know everything there is to know about.
Hold on one second. This is the I-Man picture. Question to you, Dave, is this: is this a burned out rocker, or is this some prehistoric discovery that that archaeologists have made? I mean, is this what Indiana Jones was looking for all those years and all those sequels?
Oh my goodness. You know,
this was Raiders of the Lost Ark Part 5, the search for I-Man's tomb. I hate the break. We're up against the break. We are coming back on that note right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
And welcome back as we continue. Final 30 minutes of our program, and let's check in with Howard in Florida. Hello, Howard.
How you doing, Paul?
Howard, we are doing great. Thank you.
I'm first-time caller, long-time fan.
Wonderful.
I've been sitting here each day. I watch the show, and every time I hear about this, all this money, you know, that they're going to start paying these kids, you know, and I sat and I wondered if anybody, just common sense, had thought that what do most kids do, especially if you give them money, a lot of money, And I'm just about willing to predict before. I don't know when this is going to start or when they start paying these top players. But before, when they do, before that year is out, I'd be willing to say, I can't really predict how many, but how many kids are going to be in trouble. And because when you give kids money like that, it makes them do stupid things.
Well, Howard, you are correct. I mean, I still can't manage money, and I'm old enough to be these kids' grandparents. But hopefully they will get enough counseling and put someone in charge of the money. These young guys are always every head coach that I know brings in people to counsel them. Now, whether they listen or not, I mean, I mentioned this one time before. I met a guy who was a former University of Kentucky basketball player. I got to know him, and he lost. You ready for this? He lost $120 million. He made $120 million throughout his career and lost it all. Mm-hmm. I would love the opportunity to lose that kind of money, but I'll never come mm-hmm. within a couple of solar systems of that. But these guys are getting if they get the right advice, if they put the money in somebody else's hands, not. I mean, would you trust your Randy? Would you trust somebody in your family with your money?
No.
When you make a couple of dollars for the first time, you suddenly have a lot of friends, and that's why you can't mm-hmm. trust your friends, your friends or your family. You have to be very smart about that. Thank you for the call. Really good call. Joe is up next. Joe, you're on the air.
Roll Tide, roll Paul Feinbaum. And you know what you just said is the truth. I mean, you just, you know, but anyway, this picture of our man. And I mean, I don't want him to get me wrong. I mean, I like our man. But, Paul, I mean, it's like Impractical Joker said, yeah, I put that picture up and started laughing. I mean, I don't know if he's trying to look like a convict or what he's trying. I mean, he could have put a picture of a pony would have beat that.
I mean, yeah, and I caught a lot of flack for saying it because I used a figure. I mean, most people know who Charles Manson is. He's, I don't know, you tell me, the most notorious murderer in American pop culture. I think I Man looks like an aging Charles Manson.
He does. I mean, he should have left the picture he had up.
Yeah, Joe, you're familiar with Charles. You know Charles Manson, don't you? I mean, not know him.
Oh, yeah, notorious multi-murder. He's garbage. Yeah, I know who he is.
I can't remember the guy's name. What is his name? One of his last attorneys wrote a book, famous guy. I mean, really, this guy, he told me the story. Not the one that did the famous trial, but this guy was trying to get him out on appeal. This guy had represented Michael Jackson. I mean, he had quite a list of clients, I might add. And this guy, this guy sat in our studio about 15 years ago and said that he went to see Charles Manson in San Quentin. And Joe, the guy said, I've never been more terrified in my life to be in a room with this guy. And this is one of the most hardened jails in the world with people with guns galore. But even with guards all around and outside, he said he's never seen a more frightening man. That's who I Man looks like.
He does. And I promise you that he's not going to get a date with that picture. Because, I mean, you'd be scared. You don't know what he's going to do. I mean, that picture just – I don't know if his buddy played a joke on him and said, yeah, just put that up there. That looks good, you know, as a joke. Because he can't be serious wanting this on here. I mean, he looks like
well, – now, now you know why Jim does not give his picture. Because he does – I don't even know what he looks like. But, you know, we're on Jim's worst day, he looks better than I Man.
Right, right. And I don't know what our man is thinking, because you look at that, you don't even want to hang out with him. I mean,
hang
the
out.
Picture he had up there.
I'm afraid. Here's what I'm afraid of. We have a lot of young people that watch this show, Joe. What if by some chance the show's on, you know, who knows where, and some kid in the crib looks up and sees that?
Right. They'll have to go to rehab for years.
I mean,
they'll have to have psychological
I mean, all the pacifiers that pacifiers are us are not going to cure that poor kid.
No, it won't, Paul. It won't. And that, I'll tell you what, I may have nightmares over it. I mean, I may have a dream that our man just coming after me, and I'm just like running behind you, Paul. Save me, Paul. This is a crazy lunatic. I mean, our man is not a crazy lunatic, but that picture makes him look like that. And his friends, and I'm saying this as a friend, he needs to change that. If he just put my picture on there instead, act like he was me.
Yeah, Joe,
hey, he could get some
when
notes.
I see your picture up, I don't think anything other than the obvious.
Right, yeah, you got a cool country dude that's out shooting birds.
Yeah,
I mean, he looks like he'd be flipping
hey, mama and them, bird season just started. Was it?
Is right,
it
I don't go hunt my hat.
Let me look at my watch. Is this quail season or turkey?
Well, right now it's just chick season.
Well, I'm talking, you know, like, I mean, just not being literal here. I mean, it looks to me like it's quail season, and you're on the front porch, and you got Eli Gold on the radio doing a Bama, you know, Bama homecoming game, because otherwise you wouldn't, you probably could miss that one.
That's right. And Paul, I mean, I could have my own hunting show, but I mean, you would think this is like, you know,
you could be the next Bill Dance.
That's right, the next Bill Dance. I can fish.
Didn't Bill
too.
Dance have a hunting show?
Yeah, fishing.
Yeah.
Hey, fishing.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, you might be more. You might be getting ready to go duck hunting or something, or fishing for.
That's right.
What do you fish? Do you fish?
I do. But that's what we do around here. Hey, we got three big lakes right here in Franklin County. I mean, you got Big Bear, Little Bear, Cedar Creek. You know, we got three down, big, you know, we got a lot of places to fish around here.
What do you fish for? Is that bass fishing? What do you got?
You got bass and catfish.
Catfish.
Now, I got a buddy in Phil Campbell. Now, he likes to do a lot of, you know, bass fishing.
Yeah.
But I mainly fish catfish.
Never
you know,
tell Joe the time I when I was, I was about 6 years old. My dad took me deep sea fishing.
I bet that was cool. That's something I ain't never done, Paul.
Yeah, it's the kind of memory, Joe, that I should have for the rest of my life. And I do. And you know why? I'd love to be able to tell you what it meant to be with my dad all day on a deep sea fishing, but he didn't tell me that the boat rocked. All I did was regurgitate for 5 hours.
Yeah.
And you know why I said that? Because that's the same thought I had the first time I saw the Iron Man picture. We are officially out of time for this program. We appreciate all of you for being a part of it. Some really interesting guests today. We'll see you right here tomorrow.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.